into the slot area. Tavares for the shot. He scores! Holy mackerel, the leap to turn it! The captain snaps it home. Off the boards, it comes up on the wing. A long lead pass for Matthews. Matthews is in alone. Scores! Holy mackerel! Big Pappy has given the Leafs the lead. 7:54 to go. What a play. And Matthews has goal number 70. 6 seconds left. The Bruins are going to run out of time. And the Maple Leafs have tied this series. But the long shot blocked as the buzzer goes.
All right, Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Good morning.
Great morning, Ben. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I mean, if ever there was a deserved holy mackinaw, a trio of them.
Yeah.
It was in that hockey game. It almost renders irrelevant all the conversation around game one. Now, it wasn't a complete reversal like game two was last season against the Lightning, where it was 7-3 loss, 7-2 win. It wasn't a 5-1 win for the Maple Leafs yesterday, but it was for a guy who's going to be maybe a Hart Trophy finalist. Maybe not, though.
Maybe not.
And I don't think is going to win the Hart Trophy, even though I've already made my case multiple times to multiple people. That was about as good a single person's performance as you can see in a postseason hockey game. Auston Matthews, 3 points, including the game winner in the third period in a game the Toronto Maple Leafs absolutely 100% needed to win.
Needed it. Yeah, very deserving of many holy mackinaws. Max's father, Ty, played on the Bless You Boys team. We got to win a couple rounds before we get to don't you tell me about courage and passion or whatever. It's like among my favorite calls of all time. We'll wait a couple rounds, hopefully, to get to that. But yeah, certainly deserving of whatever Bonesy wanted to throw at them last night. Cuthbert also, both of them wanted to get in. It's like clearly they had 70 in the holster. It'd been sitting there for a while, and it's like, hey, get it out. This is 70 goals, still special. Thank goodness that went in last night, though, because, and I don't mean that the puck went in, but that breakaway specifically, because there was a potential for an amazing game by Matthews to be not washed away, but a little bit papered over by not being able to come through in a moment. If he is stoned by Allmark in that moment and the Bruins come down the other end and it's a late goal, we're not sitting here talking about the amazing game Matthews had. We would get to it eventually, but I talked about it yesterday or heading into that game, is that this is about sweet sea changing moments in these games. And Samsonov had a few of them with big, big saves. Obviously that was the biggest one for Matthews last night, but this is what this series is going to come down to. You have to play a great 60 minutes for sure, but there's going to be 4, 5, 6 seconds that decide this series. And that breakaway was one of them last night.
Yeah. In the moment, like it's one of those goals with the emotion that he exhibits and the connection between he and Domi and the stakes of the game and the narrative after game one, where you're like, oh, is that the greatest moment of Auston Matthews' career? And it's like on the short list, but it's game two of a postseason series as well. I mean, there haven't been too many, you know, second round series games. There's been five of them and he didn't score in any of those.
No,
but I recall a big goal in game four of the Columbus series, which I know it's forgotten, whatever, yada yada yada. Like, he's had moments before, but to pull your team almost single-handedly off the mat after the narrative of, holy cow, they're doing it again. Here goes Jake McCabe losing his mind.
Was there anything more obvious than Boston scoring immediately after that?
Well,
the ref should have just said, cross-checking penalty, Jake McCabe. Boston Bruins are granted a goal. And then McCabe had to go sit on the bench, I think is how that should have gone.
I mean, I thought you were going to say, is there anything more obvious than, like, Jake McCabe taking his requisite, like, unnecessary penalty and then Tyler Bertuzzi taking another one in the third period? Yeah. But, okay, But let's start.
Yeah, I know.
At the very beginning with the McCabe of it all, and then David Camp forgetting what you're supposed to do with a hockey puck.
Yeah.
No, like in admiring it. Like, it's like, oh, look, the commissioner's name's written right on the puck.
Little signature. You think he signs everyone? Or they got a machine for that?
And then for Matthews to create the goal seconds later. Stanchion helping, sure. Stanchions were all over the place. But yeah, for this team to get punched in the gut as many times as they did, considering the opening goal of the hockey game, considering the dying seconds of the first period where Ilya Samsonov was like, face off, and then off the side of my head, and goal. Considering the two goals that could have been that weren't, and I mostly the Bertuzzi goal on the power play, where you're like, they finally scored on the power play, to bounce back and still score on that power play, to overcome all the things that this team had to overcome in that hockey game. I mean, faced by the figurehead of that being Austin Matthews, just an incredible overall performance by this Leafs team.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it was a good performance top to bottom, but let's also not run away from where the performance stemmed from. Like, it was that top line, and, like, fourth line was good, and you got stuff up and down the lineup, but that line rued the day. I mean, yeah, Matthews makes a play. He has the primary assist on both the goals. He gets the goal himself. The fact that it's not, look, the Leafs are going to be fired up and have emotion, whoever scored that goal, but it means something that it was Domi. I think he would have got a pretty similar reaction if it would have been a Bertuzzi, but it means something to have one of the big boys, but also one of the brought in mercenaries, to have something go well for them early on. So you just, you look at that game last night, it was all about, and again, like, I hate hitting, well, I don't hate it or I would stop doing it, but I'm going to keep banging this drum, is that it's about these little moments. And yeah, it's the Matthews breakaway, but it's what, 9 seconds after the geeky goal, Domi finds a way, it's bouncing back and not throwing up over all over yourself after the, let's be honest, the goal we all thought was going to break their back at the end of the first period from Pastrnak there. You think, oh, that's the game.
I mean, yeah. And then everybody poring over the still images of both defensemen being at the blue line and, like, whose mistake was it entirely?
Say what you will about this Leafs team, they're a team on that play. They made sure everybody on the ice had a modicum of blame on that one. It's like, Ilya Samsonov, what were you doing before? No one's blaming him for the goal there. It's like, it is David Pastrnak from the absolute slottest of slots. It's like, yeah, he's probably going to powder that one home, but he's involved in not freezing it. Then you have the weird play from Liljegren, Benoit chasing his man all the way out to the point. Then you've got Marner coming in late, and it's like, it's not Marner's fault, but of course he had to be a part of this as well. It was real team effort, making sure everybody took some blame on that Pastrnak goal.
Yeah, that felt like an absolute body blow to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And then right away you get the, I think it was Cuthbert or Simmer or whoever brought it up, and it's like, it's not their fault they brought it up. It's the Leafs' fault for it being true that Boston never having lost a playoff game against the Leafs in which Pastrnak scored. And then now you have at least one win in your ledger in that column there, like that, taking a game that Pastrnak scores in, because it does seem, and I know he just scores all the time and the Leafs lose all the time, but it does seem like every time he scores it pretends misfortune for the Leafs.
Maple Leafs also scored more than two goals in a postseason game for the first time in nine.
Floodgates opening with three.
Yeah, just three. I mean, maybe now is a good time to talk about goaltending on both sides.
Yeah.
Because one, Ilya Samsonov, I think, was always going to get the start in game two. Wasn't so egregious in game one. And again, in my humble belief, if you go to Joseph Woll for game two, that's it for Ilya Samsonov. Like, if Woll stumbles, you're literally looking at Martin Jones or Matt Murray. Like, it's just hard to get your mind around to the place that you could go back to Ilya Samsonov. Great. Like, just all around great. I will say, to start the game, there were a couple of shots that got by him that slammed off the end boards. I was like, oh, is he seeing the puck today? Yep. And moving around quite a bit, but grew into the game. And by the time the third period rolled along, and I know the Leafs themselves did a great job on that kill at the end of the game to salt away the victory, but some big saves as well. And Ilya Samsonov was absolutely full value for the victory, despite the fact that, you know, shot attempts, like, you look at the numbers, it's not dissimilar from a game one. Honestly, Leafs were not, they didn't outplay the Bruins by a lot more than they did in game one. They just stuck with it, and they at least were even on special teams.
Yeah, special teams, huge marker of it. Samsonov was able to find a way a couple of times, and, you know, I know we're talking goaltending here, but let me also make this about Austin Matthews, biggest save of the night, borderline. Austin Matthews at the very end, just like, you get out of here, is
I think they're still waiting to blow the whistle on that one, though.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Well,
I mean, it was like he immediately shoveled it under there. The officials are taught, like, if you can't see the puck, that's when you blow the whistle. There's no way you can see the puck when it's been shoveled underneath Ilya Samsonov.
I also don't know that I've ever seen, and I probably have, but it was jarring nonetheless, to see the play going on still. Again, it is not, the play had not yet been blown dead. And Ilya Samsonov is on his knees with his back.
Yeah.
So he is his chest is in the cage, yelling at the official while the play is still going. I can't say I'd ever seen that one. I've seen Curtis Joseph slip and fall and tackle an official. Mm-hmm. I've seen that before. I have never seen. And he looked so he looked both calm, but also because of the height discrepancy, because he was just flat on his knees. He looked like a toddler, like asking for something, like, can I have? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just it was a very funny visual in a moment that I can now laugh at. But in the moment, I was like, oh, my God, get up. What are you doing? But it's a good thing he didn't.
Kind of looked like a penguin. Have you ever seen March of the Penguins?
Yes, that's great. It's like the egg was under there, and he had to keep it secure.
That's right.
That's
keep it warm.
Pull.
Just
good
keep
job.
It keep it warm.
Matthews was the attentive father. Like, let me get that thing. Hey, come on, honey. Yeah. This chick's going to die. Come on.
Just coming back from his journey of whatever, 200 kilometers.
Whatever it is they do.
Yeah.
God, stores.
Poor penguins with their short legs.
Well, imagine if we were them. It's like, you know, you and I just get in the car to go get milk. They got to waddle across Lord knows where.
Yeah.
Penguin talk.
Anywho. Samsonov, great.
The only penguin talk there will be in the playoffs.
Correct. Samsonov, truly great and reestablishing self. And now you can dream about, the guy that's been... Any series that he's finished as a member of the Toronto Maple Leaf, they have won. Although, I mean, already injury concerns as he takes the puck off the side of the head.
Of course.
I saw a little bit of discourse about, hey, how come he's not lifted for a concussion spotter? And
shut up. That's why.
Yeah.
That's why. Don't ask questions about that. I don't think, and again, like, Leafs goaltender plays well. Obviously, that's a big story. Let's say you just flip these games. And the Leafs had game one go the way game two went and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It means so much to have Samsonov riding the high heading back home.
Yeah.
We talk about it, the nervous energy, and I'm sure it exists in other buildings, but I have a hard time believing it exists more in any playoff building that exists right now than what you're going to see in Scotiabank on Wednesday night. It can be nervous. It can be tight. Now, I've also been on the other side of this to say, the second you give those people a reason to be excited, they gladly will take you up on it. And guess what? Samsonov just did. I don't have the number in front of me. However many saves he made, that was the amount of reasons he gave Leaf fans to not be tight, to not be nervous. Now, it's not when he makes a big save early, you're going, oh, okay, good. It's good Sammy tonight. Now when he makes a big save early, you're getting Sammy chance. Everybody's into it. It's just, I don't think you can overstate what it means for him to be going on a high back to the building where he has had some semblance of success.
That part is very similar to the Lightning series where he was factually pulled from the game after 40 minutes of game one against the Lightning and then bounces back with a great performance. And then he's great the rest of the series against the Lightning. Not saying that that's about to happen, but I mean, stranger things have happened. The Bruins do go to Linus Ullmark. And it really, I know this was we all assumed this was the plan from the outset, but then we watched how well Jeremy Swayman played in game one. We're like, come on, I can't. All the best laid plans, like, come on, you're not actually, and I know he's the defending Vezina winner, but also we saw the first six games of that Panther series, didn't we? We all saw it. We all saw it. Dogs know it. But they do. They go to Ullmark, and I mean, they lost the game, I guess. Come on, you're not going to tell me that that was a bad decision or Linus Ullmark had anything to do with the loss. He was, I mean, without him, and Nick Robertson can attest to this.
Yes.
I mean, this is, it's not a laugher, but it's a lot more comfortable victory for the Toronto Maple Leafs than a one goal victory.
I would agree with you. Except that Jeremy Swayman was the guy sitting on the bench. This is the guy who has had the Leafs number. And I don't think that it's weird that I don't think Jim Montgomery made a bad decision, but it's possible he made the wrong one. He might have even made a good decision and he still made the wrong one. I know that, and again, this is like my own worldview leaking in here, but you know, I know not often. Normally when you have a decision to choose, in my mind, it's like, oh, would you like this snake pit or an eel pit? It's like, I don't want either of those things.
Anything in a pit.
Yeah, especially my buddy on the text line, dirty wet pit out there, okay? But I look at it and I see that he has two great
options available. It's possible he could have picked the wrong guy and it blew up in his face. That isn't what happened last night, but I think he picked the wrong guy. Swayman had the Leafs number, hadn't lost to him this year, was the guy who looked great in game one, and it's entirely possible that game plays out in exactly the same way. It's entirely possible Swayman maybe plays worse than Allmark, but I don't think you can overstate the psychological advantage that Swayman has over this Leaf team.
Can I do a devil's advocate argument here?
Do the devil's argument first and then advocate it.
That stuff still exists with Jeremy Swayman.
Mm.
And now you go back to him for game three.
Yeah.
He's never lost against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And here he goes in a pivotal game three ahead of what could be a pivotal game five and then a pivotal game seven. But yeah, at the moment, just a pivotal game three, you have the psychological advantage of Jeremy Swayman never looking up at the Jumbotron at the conclusion of a game and seeing an L there.
Yeah, I think, I don't think it was a bad decision that Montgomery made, but I don't know a single person, and, you know, this will shock you. I was crowdsourcing opinions on the matter via text as we were getting closer and closer to puck drop. There's not a single person I saw who didn't feel, and this will shock you also, it's like a lot of Leaf bias in my text.
Yeah.
There's not a single person that did not feel better about it being Allmark than Swayman.
Of course. And
look, but sometimes don't overthink it. Also, if you did a straw poll of every guy in the Leafs room, how do you think they felt about it being Allmark versus Swayman? And not, don't ask them with a microphone in their face where they go, we don't care.
Yeah.
They're both shooter tooters out there. It doesn't even matter.
No, the real truth serum, they were all ecstatic. Well, maybe ecstatic is too strong. They all thought they caught a break.
I agree. Certainly going into that game, that's 100% how I felt. And again, recent postseason history, not too kind for Linus Allmark. Mm-hmm. And they put up, you know, his postseason statistics not glowing. But then I watched the game and I was like, I'm sorry. There's just no way I can wrap my head around, hey, this is the obvious wrong decision, considering it's the way you won all these hockey games all season long. It's been, you know, since February where you didn't alternate goalies. It's just hard for me to really criticize the decision despite, you know, scoreboard.
Yep.
But yeah, watch the game. Holy cow.
Game one though. Also, like if you're going to say watch the game, watch game one.
No, I did.
That guy didn't play.
Yep. But I will say the difference for the Leafs, in my opinion, offensively, between game one and two, well, one, Auston Matthews just like, oh, yeah, I'm the best player on earth. I'm just going to win one of these games for you. Is also, it did feel to me, I don't know if you feel the same way, excuse me, that there seemed to be a more concerted effort to look for tips and screens in that game.
Like, I agree.
The perfect play, it wasn't the number one option for the Maple Leafs yesterday, as it so often is during the regular season, and unfortunately for them, it has been in the postseason, and it has not resulted in goals. And you need some bounces, and there was one that landed the puck right on John Tavares' stick in the slot on the power play, and there was one that ends up off a stanchion onto the stick of Auston Matthews, off the crossbar, onto the stick of Max Domi. It's hockey. That happens. But, no, it did, for me, it looked like a different offensive game plan. One where when you're facing a good goalie, you got to get in his face, you got to screen him, you got to tip, because setting up the perfect play, having a wide open cage, despite it actually happening for Auston Matthews in game one, and it seemingly happening for Nick Robertson in game two. But it didn't, because these two goalies are spectacular.
Yeah, you have to get greasy goals, and I think that it is we so often talk about the idea of in playoff series, you want to lay the body early on so that doing that early on, it pays dividends in game five, six, if it gets there, a game seven. I also think there's something about the psychological element of just getting, and like, duh, this goes without saying, yes, score more goals, it's good. But if you're able to get those greasy goals past, whether it's Allmark, whether it's Swayman, early on in the series, that plants the seeds of doubt for them, but it also plants the seeds of confidence for you that you can beat these guys. We've all seen it. I mean, go pick your favorite goalie story from a cup run or something close to it. I mean, the one that always stands out for me is Jaguar with the Ducks. There, I remember there are moments where it's like just one time the puck, it's right there, and
guys think they have to overpass because Jaeger was so perfect. And I think you just have to avoid getting almost mentally trapped by these goalies early on. And, you know, I think it's entirely possible Swayman comes back and puts him in a vice tomorrow night. But that's the route to do it, is a lot of tips, a lot of greasy stuff, and just being more assertive in front of the net, honestly.
There was one moment early in the game, though, where I did see the overpassing where Tyler Bertuzzi, it looked like some of those late-season games where it's like Austin Matthews just swarmed by Bruin defenders, Tyler Bertuzzi all alone.
Just wrap that thing hard to the other side, and it's like, guess what? Allmark probably still stops it, but yeah. It was, I know the exact play you're talking about. Yeah, that was very jarring.
It's funny to be talking about what a special team's success it was, as the Maple Leafs have now allowed 3 power play goals against in 2 postseason hockey games against the Boston Bruins. But they scored once, and they killed off the penalty that mattered most at the end of the game when you're protecting a lead. We can talk about special teams first, and then we can talk about the undisciplined penalties taken by Bertuzzi and McCabe, and to a lesser extent, Ryan Reeves, that was a weirdo play.
No. If you brought it up, we're going to talk about it right here, right now, because there was other things to get to. We don't have to belabor the point. What?
Yeah.
In what world? Again, Leafs won the game. It didn't end up mattering. We can sit here and laugh about it today. In what world? If you were going to wash the too many men because you got tangled up with Reeves, I suppose.
Yeah, that was it.
But then wash it. Say, it shouldn't have been. The idea that Reeves just skating to the bench in a play that we see happen 10,000 times a night in the NHL, and this goes back to the Domi slash on Marchand in game one. It's just there are certain people, and I am of the belief, certain jerseys, where they're looking for stuff. And it felt to me that was the most playoff game script. It's like, oh, this is Toronto running away here. You gotta even things up.
It didn't end up with a power play.
It was infuriating. It was a wrong call.
Softish play, I suppose. I mean, there's really no denying that Ryan Reeves helped Morgan Geeky towards the Maple Leafs door.
Sure. There's also no denying that happens 1,000 times. Why is it not interference then when Pat Maroon is holding Timothy Liljegren by the ankles and giving him a swirly in the Leafs bench? Is that not interference? I correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's pretty hard for Timothy Liljegren to possess the puck while his head is in the Bruins bench. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Good effort by Brad Marchand also to knock Joel Edmondson into the Bruins bench. Good try.
Yeah.
It's a good effort.
Yeah, also good job by Brad Marchand in that dust up at the end where Bertuzzi did take the penalty. just flailing off screen at something. And again, I'd like to understand why Nazem Kadri got such a reputation that he could not get calls. And it's like, hey, well, it's Kadri. You know, he's obviously embellishing. He's in the thick of it all the time. Does this not sound exactly like Brad Marchand? And so it's infuriating. It was a dive. I don't want them to call him for diving there, but I do want them to never give him the benefit of the doubt in this rest of the series. And guess what? Mm-hmm. Something tells me he's going to get it from here on out.
Anywho, to the special teams of it all. It didn't look like the Bruins power play has looked a couple of times. Like, David Camp misses that puck, and then the Bruins look like vintage Tampa Bay Lightning, or they look like, I guess, vintage Boston Bruins from like a half decade ago with Patrice Bergeron, where they're snapping around. Oh, and it's like wide open one-timer back of the cage.
Mm-hmm.
But they scored. They did score twice. Like, they scored once on an incredible hand-eye coordination thing. You should get credit. Like, even if it's a high stick, like just barely, but like it's a cool play.
Very cool.
You should be, that should count. But yeah, they scored twice on a power play. And again, like they killed off the penalty when it mattered most. And that one, like eye test wise, maybe Samsonov had to make a save, but they just kept firing the puck down the ice. That was one of the most impressive penalty kills we've seen from this Leafs team in the last month?
Yeah, that was a playoff kill. Get this thing out of here. Do it again. It was assertive. It was nice to see. And again, it goes back to something I kind of pointed out at the end of the regular season, is the best versions of this Leaf, I mean, the absolute best versions in this kind of Matthews era of the penalty kill have been the Mikheyev and Hyman power kill. But the best versions in terms of just limiting what the other team gets, they pounce on every puck bobble, every mistake, and they were doing a much better job of that last night. I don't know if it's some comfort they're finding with each other. I don't know if it was a night where it was working. And I mean, a big part of it as well is you got some saves, right? Like it eliminates the odd mistake that you do make and you feel a different way about it. I still have all the concerns I had about the penalty kill, but I also think a lot of the times at this time of year, it's just about bearing down and, you know, to borrow a phrase from yesterday, just keep on trucking.
You got to keep on trucking. Also, yeah, when you have an opportunity to clear the puck down the ice, like you should attempt to at least touch the puck if you're David Camp.
I agree.
Don't defer to, Timothy Liljegren, or at least, you know, maybe communicate that.
Generally speaking, don't defer to Timothy Liljegren.
Anywho, not an ideal situation. All right, back to the undisciplined penalties.
Yes.
One by Jake McCabe, one by Tyler Bertuzzi. Both in horrific circumstances.
Yes.
I mean, in a scoreless game after losing 5-1 in game one, where, like, one of the major narratives was Sheldon Keefe bemoaning the penalty taken by Max Domi in that play. Like, the only guy called out by name by the head coach.
Yep.
And in a scoreless hockey game, what, out of nowhere, here comes Jake McCabe with a cross-check sending him to the box and the Bruins score on the power play. And then, after you've gotten an incredible lift by the guy who's having the game of his life after a 69-goal season, 3 points, you take the lead into the third period of game two. And sure, we can talk about embellishment.
Yeah.
There's just no debate that that's a slash, though. And I guess you don't have to call it, but you're also well within your rights to call it by Tyler Bertuzzi.
No, of course.
And okay, it doesn't end up costing them. But, man, that especially, again, we're talking about what an incredible specialty teams game where you went 50% on the kill.
Yeah.
Like, that's now two games, and there's three instances of insane, insane undisciplined penalties.
Yeah, they're different. They're both undisciplined. You can't have either of them. The McCabe one, that's a governor issue.
Right.
It's like he does that at 25% of the force he did it at. That's a good play. You like that in the playoffs. Go in there, give them a little cross-check in the back. Hey, don't touch my goalie. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, you know, they get in each other's faces. McCabe has elite playoff snarl. We love it. That's just a governor thing. That's just like, hey, whoa. It's like teaching a kid to drive. It's like you don't have to put the pedal all the way to the floor.
Right.
There's a lot of room between here and the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what would happen with McCabe. You can kind of dial that back. Can't have it happen. You should kill him for taking the penalty in that spot. All that's true. But I don't look at that as unhinged or undisciplined. The Bertuzzi one is that. It is a guy, and this is part of the dance you have to have with players like this. If you want guys who are right on the line and right on the edge, and, you know, I might not like the benefit of the doubt he gets for it all the time, but you're Brad Marchands of the world. The guys who've been in this league, they are impossible to come by. So you have your guys that are more your Domi, your Bertuzzi, and I love them being Leafs. But there's a reason that they've bounced around, that they've been looking for a home. They're also still youngish. They're not young players, but they're still kind of learning that aspect of where the line is, when to do it. When do you poke the bear? When can you get away with it? And it's not in the last 10 minutes of a third period when it's tight. So I think that is it with Bertuzzi, is that this is part of it. You're going to have him take 2 to 3 bad penalties a series. I do feel like that's just a cost of doing business. You would hope by the time, you know, heaven forbid, a conference final gets reached, he has a little better understanding or he's found the line there. But I do think that this is, if you want this element on your team, there's going to be moments like this where it exists.
That's a horrible moment to take that penalty.
It's awful and you cannot have it. But Tyler Bertuzzi is not a 35-year-old vet that's played in 3,000 playoffs. Like, he's not, again, the reason why Brad Marchand, I might hate it, knows that line is because he's played in 100-some-odd playoff games in his career. Domi even has more experience in that regard because the run he had with the Stars last year.
We talk about Tyler Bertuzzi, this incredible playoff performer, because of the 7 games he played last season with the Bruins. I'd love to hear what he and Marchand were saying at the end of the game, too.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I can. It's this like verbal meme, but it's those, you know, those two guys just middle fingering each other in the street.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically that.
I don't disagree. That's a likely probability. We'll talk about some more.
I would like to hear it too, though, just for the record. Like, oh God, NHL. Also, it's like we got all these behind the scenes things, and I know it's like, oh, the children or whatever. Yeah, Who cares? Give me that.
Yeah, you can censor it. We'll talk about some of the other questionable moments in the game, and maybe some of the question marks going forward after 7 o'clock. But I want to do one more positive here before we take a break from this part of the Leafs conversation. The fourth line is Ryan Reeves only credited, I think, for 4 hits in the hockey game or something.
I love. Do you get this from BXA? Were you watching the same panel afterwards?
I mean, I tweeted out that he had 57 hits.
I love that BXA has a stat guy who's like, he only got credited for 4. He had 8. Because it's like, God love BXA. Do you think he's sitting there just tracking only Revo hits?
I mean, it did feel like every time he stepped onto the ice, somebody was going crashing into the boards.
I don't want to derail this conversation, but I now want an unofficial Kevin BXA stat after every game of just like, there's actually 4 block shots from that
guy. It used to be that Joe Bowen had his own stats. Before Corsi and Fenwick, he was adding up the shot attempts that were blocked and missed wide.
No, like, I love it from BXA. But, yeah, I mean, that to have that moment there was incredible.
That fourth line was on the ice, protecting a 1-goal lead with under 10 minutes to go in the third period. And I was like, that's fine. That's great. Good. Yeah. Have him out there. I mean, how often in recent Leafs tenure have you ever felt that way?
No.
It's just no. It's Ryan Reeves again. Yeah. Like, considering the narrative surrounding this guy, considering his first, what was that, his first shift of the postseason ends up in a bad
a pinch,
hit.
Yeah.
And 2-on-1 and the first goal of the postseason for the Boston Bruins going the other way. That fourth line has it rolling right now.
And every guy's kind of found their role, the thing they need to bring. I mean, Reeves, we know what he brings. I mean, we saw the stuff pregame with him and Maroon there. And, you know, there's just, it's an element you like to have, but he can take a regular shift. He's punishing guys on the forecheck. David Kampf, you know, his utility extends beyond simply fourth line minutes. We know he kills penalties, but even a guy in Connor Dewar, and, you know, this isn't to say if everybody was healthy all of a sudden, and God, we'll get to that, I'm sure, at some point today.
Yeah, after 7 o'clock.
Yeah. But so it's not to say Connor Dewar can't come out of the lineup, but I've liked what you've got out of Connor Dewar so far in this series. The guy is quick. He clearly wants to, you know, punish somebody on every shift, and he's Connor Dewar. It's not the same as Ryan Reeves doing it, but this is all you want out of your fourth line. Have some energy. Have some life. Go out there and do something. Honestly, play a little bit like you're a World Juniors fourth line from yesteryear. Go out there, find something that's moving, wearing the other sweater, and hit it. You love to see it. And honestly, Keefe trusting them is such a big thing for this team because it allows you to then, if, and again, this is more a question for when Nylander, if Nylander ever returns, but those guys being able to get extra minutes allows Keefe to kind of load up and experiment that second line in a way he wants to. And again, you know, no McMahon, no Nylander, you're not able to do that in quite the same way. But them being a line you can play and you can trust, I mean, they weren't the fourth line last night. They were the third line, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that second line after 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think with like $20-plus million in forwards. You
can. John Tavares scored.
Yeah, sure did. On the power play. Last thing also, I mean, there's not enough can be said about Auston Matthews, but like in the Dodd as well. Win 16 of 23 draws, according to the stats. Again, you can take these with a grain of salt. He's tied for the team lead with 6 hits, tied with Ryan Reeves. I mean, it's just, that doesn't track necessarily with the eye test, but just everywhere.
I don't know. No, you know what? We didn't really talk about this much yesterday because there was just so much else. And you don't want to overstate it. Like, Auston Matthews is not, you know, Milan Lucic of yesteryear, but
sure. No, this was a guy that would go through an entire season with literally like single digit hits on the year.
Well, and he'd also go through entire playoff series without making eye contact with anybody in the opposition.
Oh, I mean, one of my takeaways from game one, if they had won the hockey game, was like, oh, this guy's like kind of initiating these post-whistle scrums.
Yeah, and again, you do not want Auston Matthews going in there and cross-checking a guy in the face and fighting and breaking his hand or anything along those lines. All we have ever wanted when we talk about those guys having some gumption or some snarl is just a little bit of it. And especially when you're playing with Domi and Bertuzzi, those guys are more than happy to pick up the scraps or whatever you get started. I love the way he is initiated. And again, it's just, it's a little, hey, I'm right here. I don't know how I forget this every time the whistle blows. I am 6'3", 230 some odd pounds of pure muscle. Come get it. And it's just been so nice to see him assert himself. And again, it's easier to say when he has the big goal and the 3-point night, and he was a beast in every other regard. But I don't think you can take away what that means. You know, we do who's the real captain stuff all the time. We know who the leader of this team is. Like, we know who they follow.
Certainly know who the best player is.
Yes, and it's Auston Matthews. And to have him having that tact, I don't think it's going to change, you know, like the personality of everybody on the team. But I think it does force everybody to engage in that stuff a little more, and I think that's nothing but a positive.
Yeah, nothing but positives for the Toronto Maple Leafs as a whole coming out of game two.
One last quick one, just a very quick thing. Swing moments in the game. Right after Matthews scores, the Tavares, Marner, Nyes line gets out there, and Nyes has a great look, and his stick just completely explodes on him. And it's like, you know, Allmark probably stops that there, but it's like these little swing moments, man, they get the insurance marker there, and it doesn't end up mattering. But yeah, it's funny how these little swing moments, how differently we'd feel about it if Nyes pounds home an insurance marker or something along those
lines. Or Nick Robertson scores on a spectacular
empty net. Yep.
Opportunity that Linus Allmark makes an incredible save on. Anyways, yeah, we'll obviously swing back around to the Toronto Maple Leafs after 7 o'clock. But when we come back, yeah, we all know who the Leafs' best player is. I think we're starting to figure out who the Blue Jays' best player is.
Mm-hmm.
And he hits 5th, and he plays, well, yesterday, center field. Dalton Varsho with another bomb as the Blue Jays take game 1 over the Royals. That and more next. The Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Blue Jays take game 1 of their series against, I guess, a resurgent Kansas City Royals. It should be stated, the Royals are like, oh, this is not your son's Royals or whatever. They've played the White Sox 7 times this season. The White Sox get shut out like literally every other day. They have 3 wins. They're literally on pace. I mean, you thought the A's were going to be bad, or they were bad last year, or the Rockies.
Yeah.
The White Sox might be the worst baseball team we've ever seen. They played them 7 times. Let's take it easy.
I just had to check this person was still alive so I can make my joke here. They should bring Tony La Russa back to manage them. If they're going to be bad, just like be an absolute train wreck make him at 79 years old wear those hilarious Southside unis. Yeah.
Also, maybe the Royals are better. But
also, what would it mean if it was my son's Royals? That confused me.
Future? Yeah, future Royals.
It's like they're that actually is good because you're like saying it's like they're all just a bunch of 8-year-olds out there. And it's like, well, my son's super invested. Yeah.
Anyways, enough about the Royals. do you know how many home runs Mookie Betts has?
I don't.
6.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Do you know how many home runs Dalton Varsho has now?
Is it 6?
It's 6.
It's 6.
Dalton Varsho tied for 5th in Major League Baseball in home runs all of a sudden. All of a sudden, this team that can't hit home runs, and they still can't, like, outside of him.
No, it's really, it's like, is anyone else doing it?
Sorry, did I miss something? One of these days, someone in the top 3 is going to start to figure it out. And
Springer did his, like, mini Matt Chapman. He just had, like, the 2 good games in Tampa where he went deep. I think in back-to-back games start the season. He's like, that's my Matt Chapman April right there.
Woof, yeah. This is a time for positivity.
Sorry.
But yeah, like
you
George
did say
Springer,
it. You brought up the top 3. I didn't do it.
Yeah. George Springer seems to be calcifying in front of our very eyes.
I feel awful to hear that about a 34-year-old man.
That's
a 34-year-old
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's not ideal. Anyways, and Bobichet had the big hit yesterday. Base loaded triple.
Yes.
And Vlad has hit some long bombs. But yeah, neither guy's going great gravy like Dalton Varsho is right now. It's ridiculous. I mentioned that he had already superseded and quite obviously Kevin Kiermaier in the center field pecking order if it's a lefty on the hill or on the occasional starts against the righty where you're only playing one of those guys. And yesterday, prime example, he's the guy that's in the lineup. He was not fazed by being bumped up to fifth in the lineup. That was a part of my trepidation about moving him up there. Right. He's continued to do what he's done down the lineup. He's hitting home runs with two strikes. It's unbelievable the dichotomy of what we're seeing from Dalton Varsho in 2024 compared to what we saw in 2023. And if you are of the belief, and everything we heard was this was part of it, that the mental part of the game for Dalton Varsho a season ago was the reason why he struggled so mightily at home.
Yeah.
This is a tremendous start for him twofold. I mean, one, it's helping the Blue Jays, who are getting this unbelievable run of starting pitching. Mm-hmm. These victories where they're not hitting a ton. They're taking a bunch of walks, but they had six. They were out hit yesterday.
Uh-huh.
But two, what a weight off his shoulders that he, after the offseason of everybody showing up at his home in Wisconsin and telling him how to hit, that he is actually hitting.
Yeah, also, good for those people. Clearly not a waste of time. And, you go to Wisconsin in the winter, it's like, if that's your thing, it's like you can have some fun, I suppose. But, you would hope it's a fruitful trip. And clearly it
has. Eat cheese, drink beer, too.
Yeah, no, that sounds great for me. Mm. But, I imagine some people are like, oh, I'm healthy or whatever.
Yeah, or baseball people are usually Florida men. So.
Yeah, Florida men. And it's its own thing. I'll just leave that alone. But with Varsho, I think the thing for me, and maybe these things should not be connected, but I don't know how not to, is we have proof of concept that this can happen from literally last year. Now, I know it wasn't a position player, it was a pitcher, but Yusei Kikuchi came in and was absolutely dreadful to the point that people wanted him off the team. Just get him out of here. Sunk money. Go away.
He was battling Mitch White neck and neck during last year's spring training to be the fifth starter.
Right.
Mitch White.
Who's gone.
Mitch White.
Yeah.
Mitch White.
Fare thee well.
Mitch White.
Margot Robbie's fake boyfriend, Mitch White. But we saw it last year. And I understand with Kikuchi, unlike with the hitter, it was a much more simple, hey, let's clean up the pitch repertoire. Let's actually have more of the more I talk about this sounds familiar. Let's have a different game plan when we go out there. Let's change the approach of how you attack batters, or with Varsho, how you attack hitters. I don't know that there should be such a straight line for me, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm not surprised. I'm floored that they've got this out of Varsho. But I don't know that you can be overly surprised when you saw a guy do this exact thing last year. And Kikuchi, he came in with less expectations. It was just money. They didn't give up the best prospect in the org for him. So if anything, you can understand how the weight would have been even heavier on Varsho last year than it was on Kikuchi in his first season.
Yeah.
It's like Kikuchi was a bad starter that didn't pan out.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time.
Yes.
Trading away the crown jewel of your farm system, of which you have no more left now outside of Tiedemann, who, we're being positive, so we'll just leave that alone. That is a very different thing than, we signed this guy to a 3-year deal.
You're right. Yeah. He's the embodiment of what you could have had in Gabriel Moreno. He's off to a decent start in Arizona yet again this season. And you can't do the Lourdes Gurriel thing anymore because he was a free agent and the Diamondbacks signed him. You could have signed him this past offseason if you wanted him to come back.
I am shocked the front office has, and maybe they'll prove me wrong today, that they have not immediately rush ordered Dalton Varsho bobbleheads to give out. If I was them, I'd be taking laps on this thing. And not to say that it's going to turn into pixie dust at any moment. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it will get better than it is right this very second right now. So if I were them, it's they're better men than me, because I would be throwing free Varsho jerseys out of planes or something just to be hey, remember.
Yeah.
Remember what I did.
Yeah, he's been very, very good. I mean, this is exactly what they envisioned when they consummated that trade, right?
Of course.
I mean, this is best case scenario, but they did see a guy that had 30 homer power, and obviously the defense plays that hasn't wavered since he arrived in Toronto. A couple other notes here. Yusei Kikuchi, I know he gives up a couple of earned runs and on a home run. I don't even know if that's the case. I just saw a guy that didn't walk anybody who is pitching a contact in a game that his team is leading by a bunch, doesn't want to put runners on base.
Jack Morris?
No, I mean, that's not even a Jack Morris, right? That's any pitcher with half a brain. It's the same thing with Jordan Romano giving up a home run, although that was on a breaking ball that looked like actually was a pretty good pitch in the ninth inning. But in a game where your team is up multiple runs, you don't want to be walking people. And this is a guy that, I mean, the reason why you thought he wasn't long for this world was that he couldn't find the broadside of a barn. It's unbelievable the adjustments he's made as far as the command. Mm-hmm. Zero walks for him in that baseball game and only 81 pitches through six innings. And yeah, I guess you had a rested bullpen that you felt good going to and good for Eric Swanson bouncing back.
Oh, when I say he stayed too long, I don't mean it like it's some critical fault of Schneider. It's just like, yeah, he just ran. And to your point, like he started pitching a little bit differently. But yeah, it's just he had one inning more. Like if you chopped that inning one sooner, we're sitting here talking, and you wouldn't have pulled him at the amount of pitches he was at. But you're sitting here talking about a flawless Kikuchi outing. It was one bad inning. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. Is one not even a bad pitch. I mean, it's the upper 90s fastball that gets ridden out of the yard. That happens occasionally. No, it's incredible the places we've gone to with him as far as the command. Eric Swanson desperately needed that outing. And Jordan Romano was save number 100 on his career. Gives up the solo shot. But, yeah, a pretty sweatless ninth inning from Jordan Romano. This guy is, like, criminally underappreciated.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's me in my own bubble, but I think what I'm saying is correct here. The people still view him as like, well, he's the closer in name only, and no, maybe he only gets the accolades because he is Canadian. But this guy's
a little straw man-y, a little.
Okay, how about this? This guy's it's walking a tightrope every time this guy steps out of the bullpen in the ninth inning trying to lock it down. That's the nature of being a closer.
Yep. That's fair. I do hear that one.
Since the 2021 season, he has the fourth most saves in baseball, behind only, like, the best of the best in Major League Baseball. And he's not, like, 100 miles behind these guys. But Emmanuel Class A, who has way more opportunities to close games over that span than him with Cleveland. Kenley Jansen, maybe a borderline Hall of Famer, the way he's pitched out of the bullpen in his career. And Josh Hader. I mean, unless you're David Schneider, nobody can hit him.
That's right. I forgot about that.
And he's also he's tied with Hader. He's only got 11 blown saves since 2021. That's the fewest of the four guys that I just mentioned there. He's been absolutely nails. Now, does he close? Is it always a sweatless ninth inning? No. Again, that's the nature of relieving. Mariano Rivera, he's retired. He's already in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But as far as active relief pitchers, active closers, I do feel like there's an underappreciation of Jordan Romano, who might be, like, if he keeps this up and he's got another year of team control, maybe if he signs an extension, and certainly if the Blue Jays have some postseason success and he's a part of that, like, he's on a level of excellence track here.
If he just closes games for the rest of this season, which I have no reason to believe he won't, he has a very good to borderline almost certain chance of being second all time on the Blue Jays in saves by the time this season is over. He's at 100 now. Dwayne Ward has 121 and he sits in second.
Yeah.
Tom Hankey's a long way away. 217. It's like, that's a different conversation. We could talk about that.
If he signs an extension, like, that's a possibility.
Totally a possibility. Just put it that way. This is not a team that's been around since 1818 or whatever. Also, they didn't show up yesterday, okay? This isn't the Diamondbacks. So having the history that this org has had and with good relievers at various times in it, I think that in and of itself, I think with Romano, the perception thing with him is, if you're going to argue with me that he's a top, like, five or three closer in baseball, I think that that's where you have your quibble, and because of it, and it's a stuff thing. Like, it's like, I think people close their eyes, and for, you know, for me, it's like I think of a Duran or somebody like that. And I think he
can touch 100.
Yeah, it's like he could touch 104, and there is a difference there. And it's like, I think that is the thing that ultimately holds him back in some people's minds. And is it unfair? Yeah, it is a little unfair, but this is also baseball in 2024. It's like, all we care about is velo. So I think there is an element to that. It's like, if he threw, and he can touch 100, but it's just crazy what that means. Like, again, when Aroldis Chapman came out, I was like, he can? Oh, my goodness. And now that's like almost the bare minimum. It's just, it's insane. No Chris Bassett's out there in the pen, let me tell you.
There's no other place to fit this in, but I need to fit this in.
Yes, we need to.
That Hunter Wendelstedt injected Aaron Boone.
Oh, my God.
Because of something a fan directly above Aaron Boone said.
So good. Like, if you haven't seen it, please go.
Clearly it's a mistake. But yeah, unlike the National Hockey League and Major League Baseball, you can get a pool reporter to get a quote from an official. We have this from Hunter Wendelstedt. He said he heard something from the area of the dugout rather than determining who said it. Quote, Aaron Boone is the manager of the New York Yankees and is responsible for everything that happens in that dugout. I don't want to eject a ball player. We need to keep them in the game. That's what the fans pay to see. Aaron Boone runs the Yankees. He got ejected. Apparently what he said was a fan right above the dugout. This isn't my first ejection. In the entirety of my career, I have never ejected a player or a manager for something a fan has said. I understand that's going to be part of a story or something like that because that's what Aaron was portraying. I heard something come from the far end of the dugout, had nothing to do with his area, but he's the manager of the Yankees, so he's the one that had to go. What? Like, just say, man, yeah, I screwed that up. Like, it's a long season, and you can understand my mistake, but yep, apologies. Just apologize.
It's so hard. It's just like, cannot fix his lips to say I was wrong. It's like, apparently Aaron Boone is also manager of all the Bleacher Creatures and the Yankees fans. I cannot believe it. I love it. And this is the clubhouse lead and long baseball season. Please give me something else, but Aaron Boone, literally, again, this is not figurative, literally with his hand held outward, looking at his nails, realizing he is being ejected and snapping. It's just as good a 180 in demeanor as you could possibly see. And I love it. I love watching Aaron Boone be tortured. And now it's like not as fun because the Yankees are half decent. But it's like, this is what I love, watching him be angry.
Yeah, Aaron Boone doesn't need any help getting ejected. Okay?
No, he's good.
It's been the major league leader in injections since he became manager of the Yankees. Anyways, all right, when we come back, more into the Toronto Maple Leafs game 2, dramatic victory in Boston, setting up a pivotal game 3 in Toronto tomorrow night. The Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.